Ian's got his Coke Zero. I got my water. Welcome to the completely unnecessary podcast for Tuesday, October 20th, 2020, alongside Ian Ferguson.
Howdy.
I'm one of your party hosts, Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be discussing lots of fun stuff, like the Analog Duo announcement. The NES turns 35. Also, Q&A. Patreon poll topic. First, Ian, we got wares at ultimatenintendo.com.
Goods.
It's good to pass out to the kids at Halloween. You pass out not for resale. Blu-rays. You can pass out RBI baseball stickers, See You Podcast, enamel pins. The kids will love them. They'll be like, oh, this is great. Thanks. I love the See You Podcast. I'm 7 years old. I'm just like a pirate. I love this enamel pin. Or 6.5 pound NES guidebooks. It's great for that hollow plastic pumpkin. It won't break it at all, throwing a 7 pound book in there at all.
We're not supposed to be handing out anything this year.
Oh, in theory, I meant.
Oh, okay. Theoretically.
Do you think... Well, here's a
theoretical Halloween.
I feel bad for the kiddies just because it's on a Saturday this year, and obviously Halloween on a Saturday is like, that's better than Christmas. You have like 8 hours that you can go out trick-or-treating.
I mean, I feel bad for us, too. I mean...
Well, I enjoy giving out the candy. I say that every year. I dress up. I put on the Frankenstein outfit last year. The kids like it.
Every year I say I'm going to dress up, but...
They're adorable, the kids come in the door. They just want to ruin their health and teeth, and I'll help them do that.
Absolutely destroy their teeth.
Absolutely. Eating 17 Kit Kats within 2 day span, like I used to do. How much candy we ate as kids? Oh, my God.
Luna has candy that we can put, like, in the bags for customers now.
Okay.
And Treg and I were just... We were not being good. We were not behaving with the candy. We were just eating way too much of it the other day.
Eating your fun-sized Nestle Crunch? Those are the best. The
Crackles.
Crunch.
Crackles, and he got the Hershey's bag this year.
I don't think the Nestle Crunch formula has changed that much in 30 years. Maybe a little bit, but it's pretty close.
I had one the other day, and I thought it was disappointing. But someone pointed out that like the fun-sized ones are better. The chocolate's thicker. The regular Nestle Crunch is thin, and it's nothing.
It's like it's like an Intellivision controller wafer thin board and stuff.
I bought it, and it was like, I don't know, it was like 250 calories that I forgot about as soon as I finished.
Well, it's all rice.
Yeah.
It's like 90% rice.
I'm going to eat
it. That's a good point. I forgot. That's one of the only candy bars where the fun size is radically different than the regular size because of the thickness, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a...
There's less crunch in a real one versus the fun size. You actually have to bite through that thickness on that.
Got to bite through that mystic thickness.
God, my mouth is worrying. Intermittent fasting. I haven't had Nestle's Crunch in forever. Should I buy candy just in case there's a few kids that come around and just throw it at them from 20 feet away?
You should buy candy. You should always buy candy.
I mean, for the kids.
Sure.
I have a bunch of 90s candy from the Console Wars little media kit they sent.
I wonder if it's actually from the 90s.
It's all moldy. The bubble tape you open up and it's just molds.
The gum is just turned into liquid.
You know, people do that. They buy the old card packs and they eat the gum still. From like the 80s or 70s or what have you.
So
it's not going to kill you.
Last year for Comic-Con, when Frank was in town, we were sitting at a bar having a drink, and the bartender more or less convinced themselves that they wanted to try the gum that was in one of the packs that we opened. So they did, and it didn't go well for them.
Probably dissolves and just
it turns into like this pot. So I've known enough people who have done this recently to know how it goes. You put it in your mouth and you bite down on it, and it immediately turns into a fucking powder. It just turns into dust, and then it mixes with your saliva and turns into like this glue that just gets into every fucking crevice in your mouth.
The only time I did that was when in New Jersey, when we went to Keensburg, which is like the low rent shore town before you get to the real shore towns. It's like one off by itself. People in Jersey are like, holy shit, Keensburg. So we go there like once a year at my uncle and cousins, and it's like, it's not as far as going to Seaside Heights. There's still a boardwalk. It's a smaller boardwalk. There's still somehow legal gambling games that you can plop quarters down. That's where I won my original Hulk Hogan LJN figure. It was at Keensburg, and it wasn't a wheel. It was light bulbs that would, the light would go around and stop. Like, that wasn't rigged, but I did win there. But there was a sports card stand, and this is probably whenever Cecil Fielder hit his 50 home runs, and it was a big deal. That was like 89 or so, because you can win packs of Topps 86 baseball cards. And that was Cecil Fielder's rookie card. And I won the pack of 86 Topps cards. And the Cecil Fielder was in there. So at the time, I was like, oh, this is worth, like, whatever, $25 in 89. It was a big deal before probably someone stole it from me in grade school. But I tried the gum. This was like 3 or 4 years after it came out. And then it was awful, even 3 years later, four years later. It was, like, kind of hard to chew. And then it just, like, bubbled up somehow. It was nasty. So I can imagine.
Fermented a little bit.
I can imagine 20 years later.
Yeah,
it might have been 5 years. I think Cecil Fielder maybe had been like 91. When did Cecil Fielder? That was a big deal because no one had hit 50 home runs in like 15, 20 years. But anyway, is that still around anyone in Jersey? Keensburg? Do they have a boardwalk still?
I don't know.
You remember Cecil Fielder, right?
I remember Cecil Fielder. Absolutely remember
that
Cecil
was a big
Fielder.
Deal. 50 home runs. He's 57 years old, Cecil Fielder. It was 1990. He hit 51 home runs and 132 RBIs. That was like one of the biggest seasons like that in forever. There and his son Prince, I think, still plays. So anyway, so my weekend, Ian, I tried cutting over open a papaya. I've been on a fruit salad kick the past 2 months or so, trying to dial back the other sweets for fruit salad.
Papaya is delicious.
You know, watermelon, cantaloupe, pineapple, maybe a little blueberries. Blueberries are so good for you.
I love blueberries.
So I bought a papaya about 3 weeks ago. I have no experience with papayas. Otherwise, you buy the little package that's freshly cut. It's like $3. It's like buying orange juice. It's so expensive, a papaya. Because they're hard to fucking cut open, I guess, get right. So I bought a papaya. The sticker said, green on the outside means ripe inside. The sticker said that. So I bought it. I'm like, oh, I'll cut this open like tomorrow. It wasn't ripe yet. It was the yellow type, which is what I was looking for. And so I ruined it. It was ruined. I didn't realize.
No.
I didn't realize till afterwards, like, once you cut up a papaya, it's not going to ripen anymore. It's done. So I had to throw out a nice papaya. So I bought another one, which was, the skin was more yellowish. That's when you know it's ripe. So I cut it open, and I thought it was, like, rotten because it was reddish, like grapefruit color. But no, there's a second papaya species I didn't know about. There's a red one and a yellow one. The red one's sweeter, which was not as good. So come on. You're killing me, Sprouts. First of all, you put on stickers you don't tell me, like, that are misinforming me, us that are papaya deficient in knowledge. But then you don't tell me which type of papaya it is. They're radically different tasting papayas. So I've struck out twice on papayas, you know. I'm kind of annoyed by that.
Where was this papaya radicalized?
I don't know. Did you do anything this weekend?
What did I do this weekend? I saw my friend Lincoln for the first time since lockdown. That was fun. We played through Streets of Rage 4 from start to finish. Which is good. That was a Streets of Rage focused day because I finally got my soundtrack from Limited Run Games. And it is a nice soundtrack. Comes in a box. It's 3LP. There's an art. There's an interview book. There's really nice full art on all the sleeves. Yeah, it's a fucking stupidly nice release. But other than that, no, not a ton. Hung out with Vani yesterday. Was supposed to play D&D Sunday night, but we had to cancel.
You want to do poker tomorrow night?
No.
No, you don't do the poker?
No. I enjoyed poker. My time with poker is done.
I'm just getting into it. You know, I wanted to do the World Series of Poker this year. If this was a normal year, that was like a potential 40th birthday plan to myself, or present to myself.
Oh, yeah?
Was to go to Vegas. That was like, all right, if the Super Nintendo book sales do well, I have a little bit of money to spare, like maybe I could try that. And at least try to break even.
Your fashion isn't as shitty as a typical poker player's. I'm surprised. You'd have to get like a bad sweatshirt or grow your hair into a mullet or something to have any real.
There's a wide chance. Variety of fashion in poker. Some people wear suits. Like,
If you're gonna have a chance in poker, you got to learn how to dress poorly.
Some people dress like grease balls, like from the '70s with the gold chains and outlandish outfits.
Yeah, I feel like Mr. Lin would have been a poker player.
Mr. Lin, I'm Lin. You know, I actually watched Bloodsport this weekend. This is so weird.
A lot of people have been. Yes.
I came up free with ads. There's lots of free with ads stuff on there, like Terminator you can watch.
It's also on Netflix now, too, because I've had a few people send me photos of them watching it on their TV. So, yeah, it's been a Bloodsport week.
Now with Bloodsport, I am now into the analytics of Bloodsport in terms of the tournament, in terms of the editing out of order, of seeing people that just got knocked out now sitting on the sidelines. Like, I'm that much into it. Like, they really had to re-edit this movie to make it work.
Yep.
I'm also into the fact that there's no way Van Damme and Bold Young could have fought 6-7 times, because there's only 30 people were about in the tournament. There's like 15 on both sides. It doesn't make any sense, because it wasn't round robin.
Don't try to do the numbers.
Because if you had 7 seeds, you needed like 128 fighters to have 7 rounds of fights. You know, basically, and there was not that many in the movie. I understand that. And also, Donald Gibb, who played Ray Jackson, is not a good fighter on screen. And that's why they gave him only like 3 fights. Well, 2.5 when he throws the one guy. It's not really a fight. But he's a great character. Yeah. He's a great character. But not the best at the actual like on-screen fighting. There, it's great fight choreography for the late 80s. It's fantastic choreography, and Paco is still the best. I was always wondering what a Paco versus Bolo Young Chong Li matchup would have been. That would have been a good fucking fight.
Would have been intense.
That would have been great.
Been super intense.
Paco get those leg kicks in there, in his Muay Thai style. God. I only saw Paco in one other movie that the actor plays him. I saw him in, it was like a, really bad, like California made, like Blake Edwards type of film where he played like a terrorist or something on a plane. It's like, oh, that's Paco. They got him. There he is. He still had the facial hair. It's only the other thing I ever saw him in ever. Probably was like 93 or 94. Okay. We're on Anchor right now, Ian. Anchor.fm/the CU podcast. You can subscribe on there if you want, or wherever else you listen to us. So the cool thing about anchor.fm/the CU podcast is that you can leave us voicemails, and we're going to play the first round of them right now. So keep in mind, before you leave any voicemails, I'll know who you are by your login name if you decide to be nasty, or I can just ban you if I think. But I already pre-screened some of these. I didn't listen to all of them in their entirety, but we're going to listen to some here. And please try to keep them brief, 30 seconds or less if you can. This first one was long, but it's not really, you can't really hear it.
Hey, Pat and Ian.
So this was recorded with a mic in a fishbowl.
Goblin Blood on Twitter and YouTube.
Goblin Blood. So if we can't hear you, Goblin, I'm sorry. So in the future, make sure your mic's recording there or through your phone. All right, next one. I'm going in order.
Yeah, g'day, guys. My name's Dacko from Australia. Just want to say you're bloody two legends, mate. Can't believe it. You just get me through the day when I'm on the tools. Bloody oath. By the way, my favorite game is bloody Psycho Fox on the Master System. Oh, what a bloody cracker that one is. What else we got? And Jet Force Gemini. Oh, struth, mate. Anyway, top to you, Blade. Have a good one.
Thanks, Dacko. From, I'm guessing, Australia.
I'm guessing.
Now, I thought that was trolling at first, but I think that's really an Australian. Because Bloody Cracker, Psycho Fox in the Master System, no one played that in the U.S., so Australia.
True.
So I think that was authentic. Thank you, Dacko. I wanted to visit Australia potentially this year before COVID made our passports worthless here. I wanted to potentially go to Japan. For my 40th, I want to maybe go to Italy or Australia. Dacko, leave a voice message every week. Your accent's fantastic. All right, here's next. This one's from Daniel.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Daniel here. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I had a question for Pat. I was actually wondering if he had any overflow of boxed NES games that he would like to sell. I'm a couple of hours away from San Diego. I live in San Bernardino, so... if there's any way you can get back in contact with me, matter of fact, my phone number is 323.
Wait a second. Daniel, don't want to dox you there. Daniel, I have overflow of boxed NES games. Are you a collector, Daniel, or you looking to wadded those bad boys up for heritage auctions? But no, I'm going to be putting together my list of games I want to get rid of. I was going to say by the end of the year, probably maybe January or so, maybe February, I'm going to take a good week, Ian, and go through these and put them to the side. These are the games that are going. I have all those clear Tupperwares, you know, that I'm going to throw them in there. But okay, these are the ones that are going. And at that point, I'll put out a Google Drive document and that'll probably be semi-news on in the collector circle about, hey, what's Pat selling? And you can all go on there and start making me bids for chunks or all of it. Probably all. I'm not going to be fucking dealing with 300 different packages there.
I will believe it when I see it.
You don't think I'll do it?
You've been saying it for a while.
Well, I've been saying it for like a year and a half.
Hey, guys. This is Nate from San Diego. I was wondering if you ever noticed the sword sounds in Zelda 2 is like... But then ever since that, all the Zelda sounds are like...
Never thought about it much.
Yes, I guess. So as if you're not, if your heart isn't full.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little flipping sound.
It's true.
Okay.
The value.
Thank you.
Appreciated. Thanks very much.
That was from, wow, it looks like a Scandinavian name. Gisle. We'll say the rest of the name.
Hey, Pat, I actually had a quick question for you. I noticed the other day on my bookshelf that the spines on both of your books don't have the same font on them. Why is that?
Well, I think he's referring... I've had this question before. He's referring to the Pat Contra and the spines is different, because I went uppercase and versus lowercase and uppercase on one versus the other, right? They're a little bit different.
It is different.
I'm not sure why. I had a reason at the time. I don't remember why.
It's unsettling.
It's unsettling?
Looks like you're yelling.
So on the third book, I should go back to the NES one, because then at least...
Now, in the third book, you should do, like, the leet speak. Like, just randomly change, like, the upper
Windings?
Cases and lower cases. Yeah, just be like, capital P, lowercase A, capital T, country with a 1.
All right. Thanks for that question, Cross. This is from Andrew.
Hey, guys. Love the show. It's Lil Robitussin. My question for you guys is, have you ever been sucked into a free-to-play modeled game? And also, would you guys ever do a Among Us Patreon stream? Thanks for the content, guys. Watch every week.
So that's how you get in and out. It's like 21 seconds. Quick, succinct. Question and a comment. You get in and out. That's how we like it. So Among Us...
That's good stuff.
Let's play?
Yeah, I mean with the people in the Patreon, that could be fun. I've been meaning to play that, the old Among Us. I should give that a shot. As far as free-to-play games, I honestly don't know. Pokemon Go.
That sucked you in?
Pokemon Go has sucked me in twice. I got out of it for a couple of years, then I got really into it again a year ago, this past April. And now I just kind of play it here and there a little bit. But no, Pokemon Go is probably the only free-to-play game that I've played enough to actually put some money into.
Okay, here's our final one. This is from, let's see.
Yo, so about that section of the podcast talking about preservation, they're not preserving shit. Those people buying that stuff from WADA, nah, they're not preserving anything. It's $1,000 version of items that already exist everywhere by the multitudes of thousands and millions. They're not preserving shit with that. You got people like Frank Sofaldi and Kelsey Lewin that are actually working to preserve stuff. Preserving printed media, preserving old PCBs, code, artwork, you know, things that have been in magazines, you name it. That these people out there, they're not preserving anything. They're just preserving their ego so they can have something to talk about when they have, like, the next house get together. They can be like, oh, look at my shiny $15,000 item or $1,000 item or whatever. That's not preservation. That's my take on it. Peace.
Thanks, boom. TL.
Boom, snip snap.
Yeah, I was going to say, TL, you should be doing your own podcast. That was over the 30-second limit, but that was like...
That was good.
Well-structured, well-thought-out, entertaining, dropping a couple of S-bombs. I don't mind that. So there you go. You can go to anchor.fm/the CU podcast. Leave us a voice message there.
Good stuff.
That's good. That's better. Is that better than what you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, it was fine.
Okay. And Dacko from Australia, you're my new favorite. With Psycho Fox. That got me with the Psycho Fox. All right, Ian.
Yes, sir.
So Pat's dream or postulation was somewhat confirmed about the live-action Spider-Verse movie that they're putting together with Tom Holland and Doctor Strange, and they're allegedly, reportedly getting Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire on board for this movie. So that's kind of interesting.
It is.
I'm want to see where this is going to go. Obviously, I think they're going to potentially wrap up. Well, Andrew Garfield had a chance to wrap up shit because there wasn't a third movie. It's like, oh, Gwen Stacy died. There you go. That's your movie. That's the end of your two movies, basically. But well, it'd be interesting to see them work them in, at least to have some sort of action to sort of like tie up those two iterations.
Gwen Stacy dies? I had no idea.
Spoilers.
No clue that she died.
Sad, Ian. I know.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
what's Spider-Man going to do without his lady friend?
Well, he's going to be depressed for a while and then start hooking up with Mary Jane eventually. That's what happens in the comics.
I was joking.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that could be interesting. I don't know that I'm trying to think of what it would take to get me into a superhero movie today. And I don't know what it would take.
Oh, this is definitely it for me. I'm on board for this. And it sounds like it's moving forward. Yeah, this is more than just rumors. Everyone's been talking about this for sure. So Spider-Man 3 art theorizes Toy Maguire is Tom Holland's Uncle Ben. No, I'm out if that's the case. I'm out then. I'm out. That's if they do that, I'm out. That they better not fucking do that. Plus he's way too Toy Maguire is 45 years old. I looked it up. So like he can still probably pull it off if he gets into shape into the suit and they can CG off some age off you easily. Pal Yoshi says they do that more than you think. They take off, well, just take off like 7-8 years off you. That's all. Nothing too drastic. You know, like the Irishman on Netflix, we try to take off 30 years and it looks weird. We'll take off like 8, 9, 10 years. There you go. A couple of wrinkles, a couple of liver spots we get rid of.
Just a digital buffing.
We do that on this podcast every week. That's why we still look young. Yeah. You don't realize that we have a filter.
Oh, God.
We have a Hollywood CG filter. I spend $8,000 per episode.
We don't. I don't want anyone to think I look this bad with a filter.
You don't look bad. There's not many wrinkles.
Awful. It's bad. It's bad news.
It's bad. Stay out of the sun. That's all. The sun is not your friend. When it comes to aging. So, yeah, I'm excited for this. This is supposedly has already started filming, which is interesting. They've already started filming. They're not even, like, done with negotiations with these guys yet. I guess they can work them in if they're smaller parts. Well, they did that with Civil War. With the Civil War, when they got the Disney deal done with Spider-Man, it was like, well, we have, like, two different scripts, and so we can work it in. And it worked. It worked for the most part.
It worked.
Certainly. So you're not going to see this still? This is my fear. They use this. Doctor Strange that Sony uses Disney's goodwill to build up their Spider-Man character in order to then close him back off to the shitty Sony Spider-Verse.
Yeah, that's what we talked about last week. That would be bad, and I don't think that would go over very well.
They would riot.
That would breed a lot of bad will.
Again, it's you sons of bitches that saw Venom. It's all on you. If you didn't see Venom, there'd be no more Morbius movie bullshit or Madam Web movie being developed or some weird fucking Silver Sable Black Cat team up, which is weird because I don't remember them ever really teaming up in the comics. But either way, I don't even know how Silver Sable's considered a Spider-Man character. It's so weird to me. But anyway, I always consider Captain America and Daredevil with Silver Sable. Anyway, don't fucking see Venom 2. Don't go see Morbius. Bleed them dry. Or let them run dry, Sony, so they have to go back to Papa Shango. Don't let Sony think that they're making money on their own with Spider-Man, because they are not. It's not them. They ruined the Andrew Garfield movies. They don't know what the hell they're doing. So I'm very disappointed in you out there if you saw Venom and paid money. All right, this is an interesting little Kotaku movie. Here, he shrugged. He literally shrugged. He's like, what are you going to do?
Kotaku movie?
Dark Souls, no, Kotaku article.
Yeah.
Dark Souls player drenched in blood every time he gets hit. You see this, Ian?
I did. It's pretty wacky, pretty wild, pretty zany.
Some wacky stuff. Some wild stuff.
A YouTuber named Big Secret. Now Big Country stuck in my head.
Country, yeah. Stay
with you. Love is hard.
The quintessential one-hit wonder.
Big Secret recently uploaded a video. He built a device that whenever he is playing Dark Souls, he built a device that can spray him with fake blood. There's two modes that he has for this device, an easy mode and a hard mode. Easy mode sprays him with fake blood when he dies. Hard mode sprays him with fake blood every time he takes any damage whatsoever.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, talk about a crazy idea, but it works, and it is pretty funny to watch this man get sprayed down with the fake red stuff whenever he, you know...
purple stuff, Sunny D?
I've been making big things of purple stuff for work lately. I bought Vani a... you know those little drink enhancers? Those little the liquid drops that you squeeze into your water and it turns it into like Crystal D or
Crystal D?
Crystal D. Crystal Delight.
Now you're screwing up like me. Crystal D.
Well, Crystal D. That's
what Ian did in high school.
That's what my friends used to call it. The Crystal D. They make Kool-Aid ones, and Vani bought me grape ones. So now I just make huge things of grape stuff.
Is it just like concentrated sugar that you drop in?
It's not sugar. They're sugar-free.
Oh.
They're delicious.
Should I get into that?
You should get hardcore into drink drops.
Should we get a CU podcast drink drop? We corner that market.
And the completely unnecessary drink enhancer.
That's what 50 Cent did. He got
water enhancer.
He got
beverages.
To the vitamin water and made it fortune off vitamin water. 50 Cent.
Get a cup. Ha, get it? CUP of drink enhancer. Get a cup of beverage.
We got a market.
Get yourself a cup of beverage.
All right. So check out this video. It's wacky, wild stuff. There.
Yeah. Wacky wild stuff.
All right, we got some Atari stuff that Ian found this morning. Someone alerted us on Twitter about the Atari Mini Pong Junior.
Just gonna come out and say that I think this is cool. never let it said that a fool and his money is soon parted. That can be said. Let it be said. So have you ever gone to a convention and or sometimes arcades have them? Atari makes. Or whoever the licensor of the name Atari hired, they have these large coffee table sized Pong units, and they have big chunky jog wheels on either side.
Jog
wheel.
I never heard that expression.
Jog wheel.
You mean a spinner dial?
Yeah.
Okay.
On either side of the table, and you play Pong against the person on the other side. The cool thing about these, though, the ones that they have at like the arcades or at conventions, is it's all like mechanical. You can like see there's like beams under there that move your paddles back and forth, and that make the little ball bounce around. It's really cool to watch. It's fun to play. It's got like some satisfying clicky noises and all that. But they sell them, and they're like $3,500.
Yeah.
So they've announced the Mini Pong Junior, which looks just like one of those coffee tables, only tabletop and small. And instead of it being a mechanical, representation of Pong, it's just an LED or LCD screen or something in the center there. And it's got the two little knobs on the side. And I don't know. I'm going to be real. For the right price, I would potentially, be the person who's dumb enough to buy one of these. I think it's kind of neat.
Yeah, we don't know how big this is yet. That's the thing. It's Arcade 1-Up is going to be, looks like, producing this with Eunice. So, I don't know. Well, the reveal is going to be after the podcast. It's going to be on, 11 a.m. I think on Wednesday the 21st. So, yeah, maybe it's like a 12-inch little guy or something like that. So it's like a little bit bigger than a little handheld like that. So it gets the point across.
I'm a huge fan of like the old like 70s like tabletop LED game units and stuff like that. Yeah. Not just the arcade ones, but like just the ones
well, that's more 80s.
Like the two-player like baseball and basketball ones. Like I always had fun with that shit. Okay. And this reminds me in its stupid simplicity of kind of like a modern version of one of those.
I'm going to guess this is going to be like 12 inches.
Yeah. I'm thinking perfect size to put on like the middle of a coffee table.
And it's enough that you can both look back and forth and do it. There.
So
a nice chunky jog wheels, as you call it. That's a really interesting term. Jog wheel.
You've never heard the term jog wheel.
If I look that up, will that actually come up? Jog, is that one word?
Yes, it'll come up. That's what the ones on DJ controllers are called. That's
jog dial or jog wheel.
That's why the jog con was called the jog con, because it has a jog wheel in the center.
A jog dial, jog wheel, shuttle dial, or shuttle wheel is a type of knob ring wheel or dial which allows the user to shuttle or jog through audio or video media. Not necessarily a controller.
Well,
but I see what you're saying.
Namco called it the jog con for the PlayStation, so I don't know what you want me to say.
I'm just saying, you don't be shocked I never heard of it, because I never heard of it.
I'm just saying.
Okay. I mean, it's always a spinner. Spinner dial. Arkanoid spinner, not Arkanoid jog wheel. Anyway, sorry. All right, but they're also, Ian... They're also, they had something that came out a couple years ago. I just want to talk about it real quick. And I'm surprised we didn't see this. Atari put out a handheld a couple years ago. It's like 20, was it 27 quid, as they say, across the pond. It's a little handheld that is like, has like wood, grain look to it, and little ribs with a little joystick looking D-pad looking guy, thumb joystick little thing, and two buttons on it. And I just want to bring it up because I think it looks cute. We never talked about it. It has 50 games on it, has AV out, and I never heard of this before. I've never seen this for sale. I'm just surprised we didn't ever see this before. So I'm going to put the video. If you're watching it on YouTube, you'll see the video of it right there. So this is my point with this and the other thing. There are products that Atari can license and put out that I think are a good idea or not to cash in, that people might still enjoy an item like this, or the little tabletop little Pong thing. There are smart things I think that people would want that Atari used to put out. Not a speaker hat.
I was going to say, speaker hats and the VCS are
watch that never even came out that they took money for, I believe, allegedly. So there's stuff like that I think makes sense. An Atari casino, not so much. An Atari hotel, not so much. You know, but they're also into the crypto, which is an article on Forbes about Atari bets on crypto that, I don't know. We'll see how this happens. But they're looking to sell these tokens and basically do, I guess, like an internet offering, like an IPO, I guess, version of their crypto is going to come October 29th on Bitcoin.com. Retail investors outside the U.S. is going to cost, 25 cents per token. It's going to cost, it looks like. They're trying to sell $1 million worth of Atari tokens in the hopes that the tokens will become the standard currency throughout the sector.
Ooh, I feel like that's a... it's a big wish.
Tokens can initially be used for in-game purchases and for partner games with the Pong developer aspiring. They're not the Pong developer anymore. They're not that Atari. It's not Nolan Bushnell fucking smoking cigars, putting together Pong machines.
Well, it's like when Tommy says "we" when he's referring to something in television did back in like 1982.
Which wasn't in television because it was Mattel. It's like Mattel made the Intellivision. Intellivision didn't make the Intellivision. Sorry, what was I saying? Okay. So the tokens we use for in-game purchases and for partner games with the Pong developer, blah blah. So I think what they want to do is sort of work this into the VCS some way, and then of course they want to do their online casino thing, so obviously it makes sense for that. There are people that are into crypto. I'm not. I've warned against crypto when on the Notchcom podcast, and I called that crash like 2 months before it happened. What was that, 2 years ago when that crash happened? I said don't gamble with this shit. This is dangerous. This is it's a digital beanie baby cryptocurrency for the most part. People, it's not stable enough to use it as an actual currency. If it's not stable, it's not currency anymore. You can't use it. If it wildly swings day to day the price of something, the value, it's not a currency yet. And so far it has not worked out where Bitcoin is a reliable currency. It's a digital holder of value. So that's what it is. So I guess if Atari wants to get into this, good for them. They want people to buy in. They get money automatically. It's like buying a gift certificate. You don't have to spend it. We already got your fucking money. And now we're buying into you, thinking this is going to rise in value, so you'll buy into it more. You know, that's what Atari is going for. It's smart for them to do that. They're going to hook idiots.
Sure.
They're going to hook people. So, yeah. You into crypto at all? You don't want into crypto?
I know a few people who are into it reasonably.
What's reasonably that they don't spend too much on it?
No, they have some. And they say, let's wait and see. I mean, I have no interest in crypto, but
no, it's nuts. To me, it's nuts overall. For everyone to say, yeah, I made money. There's people that are losers. There's always losers.
Sure, you can make money, and yeah, but people will lose money too.
Oh, people lost everything a couple years ago when the crash happened. When it went up to like 20,000, then it crashed down to like 10. People lost everything. Some people. It was like literally like Beanie Babies. People were investing in this, not knowing, and it was FOMO. It was like, oh, this is going to go up forever. It's going to be worth $1 million. No.
Nothing does that.
The big whales are the winners. The people that can manipulate markets are the winners when it comes to that. They know how to get the fervor up, and then they know when to dump. Those are the big winners. They get the little guys to put in the money, and they're the losers. That's what happens with this stuff. Right, sorry. I'm already starving. God. I'm already starving. I need a red papaya here.
A red papaya?
Because I don't have the yellow one. Sorry.
It's all right.
You want to talk about a little NBA 2K, Ian?
NBA 2K21 is adding unskippable ads to their game loading screens, which is annoying to some people. Unlike the the UFC thing that we talked about a few weeks ago, at least people will know about these ahead of time, I guess. At least you know. It's just disappointing to see... when did that come out? So is it ahead of time, or are they adding them after the fact?
I don't know. I mean, this article's from 2 days ago. The game's already out, right?
Yeah. So, it's already available. So this is happening after the fact, which is awful. And it's just proving that advertising in these AAA games is becoming inescapable. And I know some people, I think with sports games, it's going to be easier for some people to swallow because they're, you know, your live televised sports are already swamped with ads. That's what we kind of talked about with the UFC thing, was that it's annoying, but some people were trying to defend it because that's how it looks when you're watching it on TV. I don't want to buy a game and then I just don't want to feel like I'm buying ads.
So this was an Oculus ad in this YouTube video from Steve Iver. So it like goes to like a little billboard. It says 2K TV, and then you're watching a real ad for the Oculus. Play for real Oculus. Then it goes back to your game. It sucks. I would say if it's silent at least, but if it's fucking audio, like say if the game's gonna load up no matter what and take 15 seconds, if you put something in front of there, I personally would not care as much. I'll ignore it. But if it's audio and intrusive,
yeah.
Then it's like, fuck off.
Right, if it's just visual, it's annoying, but that load screen is going to be there anyways.
But if it's audio that's there, it's like, fuck you then, because now we've crossed the Rubicon, right? Now,
yes. So, yeah, I don't know. This stuff doesn't impact me much because I don't play a lot of the games that this is affecting, but it's one of those things that will probably eventually trickle down even into the smaller games that I enjoy, and I'm not looking forward to that day where video games become like watching TV where you have to count on commercial breaks and shit like that. That just seems absurd.
Sure. All right. Anything else to add?
No.
No, nothing else happened the past weekend that was worthwhile to talk about?
I had a good veggie burger yesterday.
Not turkey, a veggie burger. Was it impossible?
No, it was. I think it was a different one. I think it was Awesome Burger or something
It's still the same plant-based thing.
Yeah, it was a plant-based one. It was really good. One of Vani's friends works for a restaurant that was adding a whole bunch of like plant-based stuff to their menu. So like friends and family of people who worked there were allowed to show up and order something, and then you took it to go basically to try it and let them know what you thought, and it was really tasty. They've come an incredibly long way with plant-based meat products.
No, they're getting closer.
Yeah.
They're getting closer. Now keep in mind, they're not that much healthy necessarily in meat, but it's not why you're eating it.
No, you're eating it because it's better for the fucking planet.
Better for the planet,
or because you don't want to eat animals.
Yes, animals.
There's lots of reasons why you would eat it. But the one that I think, always gets people that's not true, and people think this about vegetarian and vegan food all the time.
Yeah, you're not healthier.
Is that it's healthier? Well, it depends on how you do it.
Yeah.
There are still plenty of ways. I mean, if you're loading something up with veganaise, like vegetarian, cheese, or those sauces. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's vegan ranch; it's still fats and oils.
Yes, and butters if you use butters for your plant foods,
butter is not vegan, but yeah,
for vegetarian,
sure.
Though. Yeah, ever eat Indian food?
It's fucking delicious, and it's also not
it's awful for you.
Yeah,
there's not meat in most of those, but they're still awful for you.
Delicious though.
Yes, but that's the point. So do it because you care about the carbon footprint, or you don't want to eat animals. But the health wise, it's slightly better. If you look at some of it, but it's like it's not significant. You're not going to be dropping pounds and pounds necessarily eating, this impossible meat.
If you were to compare a double cheese impossible burger to a double fucking fat boy burger, the impossible burger is going to be healthier for you, but you've still got all those carbs and things on there. Why am I talking about health? I'm not healthy. I'm dying slowly.
We all are, technically, Ian.
No, I'm dying faster than everyone else.
You don't look that bad. I don't know why you keep saying this. You can put yourself. I don't think you look 40.
The world is killing me, Patrick.
You look a couple of crow's feet, but who doesn't? You're not wrinkly.
I actually don't mind my gray hair.
It's very statesman on you, Ian.
Gray hair.
Looks like you'd be in Congress in the 1850s with that look.
It's my reward for making it this long. That's how I look at my.
You think
hairs.
You live to be 40?
I mean, in my youth, I was curious about whether or not I'd make it to 40.
With your strip use?
I'm much healthier now in terms of...
You stopped smoking. That's remember when I first met you, I fucking harangued you to stop smoking?
Yeah.
Because I can't be friends with smokers. I just can't. Like, I just can't.
I still go through a pack about a year. About a pack
like
a year.
One a month? You pick a day once a month to smoke a cigarette?
And there's like a couple days a month where I'm like, I'm cranky, and then I'll pull a cigarette. I'll pull a cigarette out of my drawer and go outside and puff it down real fast while tapping my foot and looking angry. And then I'll get rid of my cigarette and I'll go back inside.
Couple days?
Yeah, a couple days, Patrick.
But I'm glad you stopped smoking. The smoking ages the shit out of you. Obviously.
It sure does.
It's terrible.
I'm smoking a lot, too.
I got to get you on the supplements, though. Still. I got to get you on some supplements. Get some vitamin D going. Do you take vitamin D?
Actually, that's the only vitamin I take is vitamin D.
And you feel better with it, though, right?
I don't even know anymore. But I take it. They've got my money.
All right, Ian. You're anti-facts. You're anti-science. I'm going to do a two-hour video on you. All right.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Ian, this day has finally come. This glorious, wondrous day that for 3 years I've been wishing for and predicting, and maybe in an email pleading with the people at Analog for this day to happen. The Analog Duo, their FPGA PC engine / TurboGrafx 16 has finally been announced. This was tweeted out on October 16th. The skies parted. The sun shone down on all of us. An all-in-one reimagining of perhaps the most underappreciated video game systems of all time. Compatible with nearly every NEC system and game format. TurboGrafx 16, PC Engine, Super Graphics, TurboGrafx CD, PC Engine CD-ROM.
Do you know how you're supposed to say that? You're actually supposed to say ROM-ROM. CD-ROM-ROM. That's what the square is there for. ROM-ROM.
Okay, that's too cutesy for me.
ROM-ROM. Okay. Super Arcade CD-ROM, 1080p, zero lag, Bluetooth, etc., etc. Completely engineered in FPGA. So this is fantastic. This is one of those things where I woke up and checked Twitter, and my mentions was just everyone under the planet, on the planet, making sure
everyone under the planet.
I've seen this under the planet,
the underworld of the retro gaming community,
weird lizard people. This is exciting to me. This is my this and the Game Boy are my two favorite systems, and Analog has done them now two times in a row, ensuring that I will fret about whether or not I can get something and spend money on their devices. This is something that Pat and I have kind of posited was going to happen at some point. I did not think that Analog would do just a PC engine with. See, unlike the Sega CD, and even with the Sega CD, the CD units are out there. They're available. They are expensive now, and they are breaking down. But I did not think they would do a PC engine without trying, or a TurboGrafx without trying to put the CD attachment on. Reason being, on the Sega Genesis, the CD attachment is kind of an afterthought. On the PC engine, more so than the TurboGrafx, but on the PC engine, it's not. A good solid half of the library is the CD-based games. Many, many of the popular games that you think of when you think of PC Engine or TurboGrafx are the CD-based games. I did not think that they would half-ass it. They could have left the port on the side of it to attach a CD unit, but those are even harder to find than Sega CDs. They're even more expensive, and more so than the Sega CD, they're generally in worse condition.
Sure.
So I had a feeling that this would be the system that they would try to do the all-in-one unit on, and they are.
In terms of interesting things, so the it mimics a PC Engine or a Turbo Duo, does the cards, it does the CDs, it does the import versions of both, however you want to look at it. Basically, it's region free. But it also does Super Graphics. Super Graphics was a weird, poorly supported, not successful, almost like half step up upgrade to the card, the card unit. So
it,
you know,
it's like the 32X of the PC Engine, kind of.
It was kind of their attempt to, yeah, make it more like a Super Nintendo, or you know, get it closer, more on par with what the you know, the Super and the Genesis were doing. Which is funny because the PC Engine is no slouch.
No.
But there's only a handful of games released for it. Most of them are expensive. And I believe the original Super Graphics,
only five games, yeah.
Yeah, and the there's like Mad King Grandzort, Daimakai Mura, which is Ghosts and Goblins.
Ghouls and Ghosts.
There's 1944.
41 Counterattack.
Okay, I don't remember what the other two are.
Aldines and Battle Ace.
Yeah, okay, Aldines.
So like this was their 32X. This is a failure. It looks weird as hell, too, the console.
It's ugly as fuck, yeah. And there's no way to hook the CD unit up to the Super Graphics. So this is interesting in that it's the first time you'll be able to easily switch between
You had to buy that weird gray one to hook it up. You couldn't use a regular one. You had to buy the CD-ROM. Yeah, that other weird one that's harder to find.
Oh, so, I thought you couldn't do it at all.
I'll look on Wikipedia. It's hooked up, but you need that this one, the gray one that looks like that. That one.
Gotcha. So other things that were announced, the big thing is that they are doing the card adapter for the Game Boy, the Analog Pocket, which I was expecting to see. With the Pocket having two FPGAs, there's really no reason other than size that you wouldn't be able to, you know, basically adapt anything into there that's cartridge based if there's an FPGA for it. So this makes sense.
And it makes sense why they delayed the announcement. They wanted to wait for this. Then it's like, okay. Because I kind of knew this. You'd have to be able to throw this on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to talk about is So when Analog generally releases a product, first of all, I realize that there are problems with Analog, their pre-ordering, and how they kind of communicate with the customers. And I'm not certain that it's going to be better this time. It already says limited supplies. I wish they would do some sort of open pre-order, especially this far out, because this is definitely going to be a shit show when it comes time to pre-order. But unlike other Analog products, you know, you always see when they announce something like the Mega SG, the Pocket, the Analog NT, the NT. There are people who don't see the value in the purchase price. Some people do. But when you look at something like the Super NT, you can get a Super Nintendo for cheaper. It's not going to upscale. You know, it's not going to be designed to, you know, work with the TV the same way or output the same quality picture. But there's still hardware out there, you know, that will run those games.
But there's also methods to make it HD with a cable. Yes. Or
When the Pocket sold out, people were upset, but you saw a lot of people being like, I can go get a Game Boy or an SP or something like that. You know, people figure it out. The NT or the Duo is interesting because it's the first time they've released something where the price point, you can't argue that it's not a value proposition. This is coming out at $199.99.
With a controller, with a Bluetooth controller.
With a controller. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as any comparable NEC PC Engine or Turbo.
Or Combo, TurboGrafx CD.
Setup, yeah. That would even come close to being as cheap as $200. It just doesn't exist. The setup that I'm using right now, a PC Engine Duo R with a with a RetroTINK SCART 2X, an RGB mod on it, and a region mod on it. Once you factor in getting all those mods, having those mods installed, buying the unit, you are easily looking at something that is costing $500, and I could see that running up to $600 today easily. A PC Engine Duo, Duo R, in good condition is probably going to run about $300. A US...
That's before you mod it.
Before you mod it, yes. That's before you mod it. That's or if it has mods included, if you're lucky to get one off of eBay that already does, but you're still going to be paying $300 for unmodded ones too, roughly. US Turbo Duo, I've seen those go for as much as $400, and those require almost always replacement of all the capacitors.
Mine was recapped.
They require a recap and then all the modifications and stuff on top of it. So, long story short, this is the easiest way anyone will have and the cheapest
and
way.
And upskilled.
Yeah. Right. That's what I'm saying. To play this stuff, which makes this, I think, very tempting for people who have been waiting to get into PC Engine and haven't. I expect this to sell out quickly. I expect there to be lots of upset and sad people, but I'm not going, and I wish that could be avoided, but I'm also not going to lie and say I don't think this is an awesome item. I mean, yes, I want this. This is what I've been waiting for.
This is the best product I've ever come out with. I will say that. This product makes the most sense. It's the most reasonably priced for what you get. It fulfills a direct need.
Yeah, they're filling a hole that is. I mean, expensive and also dying hardware.
Yes, it's also their first disc-based system that we're seeing, which is also important. As I always said, there has to be disc replacement systems. Like, great, we got most of the cartridge ones done. Great, that's fantastic. What about the disc stuff? And so, this I don't know how many they're going to produce here, but I really hope that they reconsider how well limited whatever that means to them based upon the appeal, that they at least do a second run, because this is also going to be the first time I think people are going to jump in on this. I never bought this console before or experienced it, especially with the TurboGrafx Mini just came out earlier this year. So Konami is starting to get some of these games back into the public square, so to speak. I really think that this is something that could sell very, like, a lot better than you might expect. I think they should, if there was ever a thing they should take a chance on, it would be this.
Yeah, the PC Engine, and it's not just the hardware is expensive and failing, it's also not the easiest thing to figure out if you're new to it. There's many different, sure. You know, there's, and a lot of times, you know, the stuff is similar, but there's the PC Engine, the PC Engine core system. Do I need to know the difference between a Duo, a Duo R, a Duo RX? What's bad
arcade
about
card? What system card?
What's bad about the US one? You know, it's not exactly a friendly.
Lots of ins, lots of outs.
Yeah, it's not a friendly ecosystem necessarily for new collectors. So yes, I agree. This is kind of a one-stop thing, and I do think that, like I had said, like you said, lots of people who have been thinking about it for a while will say, okay, if I can get this, then I will start buying PC Engine stuff.
I like the fact that there's not a lot of moving parts. It's not a tray. It looks like it's one of those pop-in things, and you press a button, it'll pop out the disc, it looks like. It's not an actual tray. You have to worry about that. It would have been nice to have kept it with a pop-up.
Yeah,
but probably an expense thing. It's probably harder to get that nowadays, that tech versus just a little sliding thing, I guess.
Yeah, if I have one design problem, it's that, because those motors can go. I would have much preferred just a flip top that you can, you know, drop the CD in. But yeah, I don't know. The only other thing that seems kind of uncertain is that they don't outright say if you will need the arcade card or not. It does say Super Arcade CD-ROM up in the top big text. It also says that down below, but technically original PC Engines were compatible with those too. You needed the arcade card. So I don't know if the arcade card would be built in. I think it would be. But I'm just surprised they did not clarify that.
I think that, yeah. I don't think they'd want people to get this and have to go out and buy a $30 or whatever, $40 arcade card.
Also, I realize that these are $30 or $40. Think $30 or $40?
That's when I bought mine.
Yeah, no.
Well, it says right here, you know, Super Arcade CD-ROM on this website.
I pointed that out. I don't know if it'll do. Hopefully, it'll do it without the card. It just doesn't say it specifically.
Also, I realize that these are renders, but all the pictures of the cards going into the system show the card going really deep into the system. There are a few PC Engine games that are in thicker cards. The Super Street Fighter, or the Street Fighter 2 CE, has a thicker card. So basically, they're thin on the front. Well, you have the Street Fighter 2, don't you?
Yeah.
It's thin on the front, but then it bubbles up and it's fatter in the back, so they can put more chips in it. Mm-hmm. Also, I believe Populous does that. So if you have to stick the card in as far as it shows, it's not going to be able to fit those cards. I'm assuming that is something they will take care of. Like I said, it's just a render, but that's something that I thought of.
I'm sure they'll figure that out there, because that would stink that you can't play a few cards like that.
Especially because the Street Fighter port on Turbo is very, very good, and it's fantastic. Definitely something. Well, it's one of the first games most people want to get when they pick up a PC Engine or a Turbo, because it's a miracle that fucking port is as good as it is. But it's amazing.
It says it right there. I mean, compatibility: Hue cards, Turbo chip, CD-ROM, Super CD-ROM, Arcade CD-ROM. It's right there. Region free, worldwide compatibility. Scanline options, scalar options.
Yeah, we all know that. That's typical stuff at this point.
It's 1080 or 720p or even 480p. Lag-free, zero signal, blah, blah, blah. It has two USB ports for your own controllers, or it has the original, I guess, PC Engine port.
It uses the turbo port.
Oh, it's using the turbo one?
I think it says it uses the turbo port.
Oh, it is
there.
A bigger... That's kind of... Well, there's a lot more turbo controllers out there. You can get an adapter for a PC Engine one anyway.
There are adapters, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually smart, because there's not too many, US ones. It's hard to find a US turbo duo controller, but... okay, that's a great... Actually, that's great that they did that. If you want the multiplayer, I guess you still got to use that good old TurboTap. There's no way around that. You got to TurboTap it. That's kind of cute that they only have the one, I guess. Original style cartridge slot, 2 USBs, SD card firmware updating, Bluetooth, 2.4G, and 2 USBs. There you go. And it supports the analog DAC that we spoke about, last year we talked about that at the time. And then the controller has a 20-hour battery life. Wow, that's damn good. There you go. So, yeah, I'm in for this for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in for the Pocket as well. The Pocket, there'll probably be a second print run eventually, but I'm in.
They said they were going to do another. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, I mean, they've done second print runs for stuff because they realized there was demand for it, but they really want to make sure that, I guess, the demand's there before they do it for some of this. But, this is gonna sell out. When I saw $200, I was like, holy shit.
Like, yeah,
they could have charged $300 for this and people were going
to
buy it.
I sent it to one of my friends who is usually very, very skeptical of stuff like this. And he was like, this looks neat. And then he was like, wait a second, $200? And I was like, yeah, $200. And he's like, okay, yeah, that's a game changer. And I was like,
yeah, this is no longer. Truly. Well, I got to think about it. It's like, no, there's no
sinking. It's just do it.
Will this bring down the price, you think, of the modded stuff a bit?
Someone asked. I don't think it will. It could. It has the potential to, but I don't think it's going to bring the price of anything down. This is going to sell out very quickly, and all it's going to do is raise the price of the Analog Duo to the price of what people are buying.
If people scalp them more.
If not more. I think it's going to make the price of this very expensive. It's not going to... You would have to really... I think you could bring the price of the official modded hardware down. Yeah, you could.
I think it
but you would,
would
you
a
would
bit.
You would need to release more of them than Analog is probably going to release.
Let's say they do 5,000 or 10,000.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to have any meaningful effect on.
Okay. Well, let's say if I was in the market for one of those, I'd wait for this, obviously. It's like, okay, I'm
sure. And then if you don't get it, you can go back to it. But like I said, I don't think that's going to actually change the price of anything meaningfully.
Okay. I think if I had a choice, I think I'd go for the white one, because I already have a Turbo Duo, obviously. And I have a Turbo Duo in the box that I got from Nintendo Dan.
I think the US Duo looks dumb.
You don't like that?
I don't. So I would definitely go the white one. Yeah, like, I don't like the black one.
Get some Butterfinger. Fingers on there, though.
Yeah.
Some cheese fingers. Good job, Analog. I mean, I kind of... Let's put it this way. When I had asked kind of in emails, hey, guys, you working on this? I get, like, non-answers. I'm like, okay, this is happening. Because I got all the other FPGAs worked out for, like, 8-bit and 16-bit for the most part. They're all done.
Right.
In one form or another. So the question remains, after this, do they try to... do a Sega Saturn one? That'd be the second biggest deal if they did a Sega Saturn one like this. That would be huge.
That, I wouldn't necessarily be interested in that for me, but if they did, that would be something I would absolutely look into for Vonnie. But
because it's the same sort of issue versus like the Turbo Duo.
Yeah, I mean, and it's getting to the point where Saturns are falling apart. And they are getting more expensive, and they're just getting harder to find. And while the OneDrive or the optical drive emulation emulators exist, and I think they're great, I think there are people who still would want to be able to put their discs in and play their discs.
Lots of people have the games.
Yeah,
it's hardware preservation. It's fantastic.
And that's kind of my thing. Like, you know, people always talk about how you can crack and do all that stuff with the analog stuff too, which makes a definite which increases people's interest in it. But honestly, the reason I go after these is because I already have a large physical collection of the games for PC Engine and Game Boy. If I didn't, I honestly wouldn't be nearly as interested. I could find something cheaper to use as an emulating device if I just wanted to load something up with ROMs.
Sure. I'm just glad that it says on the website clearly that this is limited here. Because I went back and I looked at all the Game Boy social media. The very first announcement
for the first one
Pocket, like a year and a half ago, said this is going to be limited. After that, they never said it again. So no one had any idea.
Right.
It was lost. So maybe they learned that, okay, we should say it's limited right now so people aren't pissed if it sells out in 10, 15 minutes. You know. So, all right, Ian, we're going to plan for this. If you get up early, get one for good old Pat, and I'll pay you.
Will do.
I should have said that for the Pocket. I had no idea with the Pocket that it was limited. And I wake up, oh, it's gone. Fuck.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's nuts. All right. Ian.
Patrick.
This is an interesting story about Sega released an unfinished Golden Axe demo.
So, weird story. It goes some places. So Sega of Australia in 2012 was working on a package of games that was going to kind of freshen up or reintroduce some of their old IPs. I can't remember what the name of that package was supposed to be. It was canceled anyways, but it was going to have an Endless Runner Shinobi. It was going to have an Endless Runner Shinobi. It was going to have a new Golden Axe. There was something else it was going to have. They were going to be connected by like a hub world. And Sega, during their 60th anniversary, released a bunch of interesting things, many of them for free to Steam. One of them that I thought was cool was called Streets of Kamurocho, which was basically Yakuza mixed with Streets of Rage 2. They did a full graphic swap and all that. So they were releasing kind of like fun things for their fans. Well, one of the things they released was this Golden Axe demo that was supposed to be part of the software package that I was talking about. And it had been canceled. So they gave it the, you know, humorous title Golden Axed. And it's a one-stage demo. And I have it downloaded. And unfortunately, I did not get a chance to play it because I am ill-prepared. So people thought it was interesting to see. And it is. It's cool to see this unreleased stuff come to light. And, you know, kind of get to see behind the scenes what they've been doing with some of these games that haven't come out. And lots of people have been calling for Sega to work on their old properties. Sega seems particularly weird about revitalizing their older stuff. It took forever to get Streets of Rage 4. It was like 30 years almost since the original. People definitely want to see a new Golden Axe. It's probably one of the IPs that comes up the most. Unfortunately, the release of it wasn't without its own little bit of drama. Where is my, there it is. Tim Dawson, who worked on it, put out an informative Twitter thread, giving his take on it, cause he was one of the guys who worked on it. So woke up to the surprising news that Sega's releasing the Golden Axe prototype I coded in 2012 under crunch conditions. This appears to be a surprise to everyone that I worked on. He goes on to say, this project was my personal nexus of nightmare hours, inept management, industry realizations, and heroic achievements achieved with a small team under unreasonable conditions. He said, it's weird to see it 8 years later without context, zero credits, and a joke title sequence. Right then and there, it's kind of... I understand that annoyance. If you're going to throw something out for people, at least credit the people who worked on it. You know, Sega puts this stuff out. It's not like there weren't people behind it who had to put in some effort to make it. You know, it's not like they just found this weird artifact sitting in the bottom of a closet. There's a story behind it.
they talked. So he goes on to talk about how they had to create it in like a week and a half. He was putting in 14, 15 hour days, and they shit canned it. So he quotes from the Steam page. He says, "Golden Axe may be janky, maybe buggy, maybe an artifact of its time, but it offers a unique glimpse into the prospect of a project that could have been." And he says, "Go fuck yourself, Parasites." I realize that the way there's a weird, I think, the way that was posted on the page is very dismissive of the fact that there was any human involvement in it, and they kind of released it as a joke. I do think that crediting the people who worked on it, especially after reading the story behind it, probably would have been a nice thing to do.
So Sega initially thought it was funny to describe the demo as janky and an artifact of its time. Well, it could be an artifact of its time, but calling something janky because some guy worked on it for 2 weeks only, yeah, that's kind of disrespectful.
Yeah, artifact of its time because you didn't give it time to flourish. Like it's not like it was shit canned
It makes it sound like, oh, this was horrible, so we didn't come out. Like, no, you gave it like two weeks to come up with something.
And weird marketing decisions prevented it from getting released. So that did kind of leave a bad taste in my mouth. Someone does go on to ask, I don't know if I can find it. I can't find the exact response, but someone does ask him, how do you feel about people playing? And he's like, oh, if you want to check it out, he's like, definitely check it out. You know, he was happy with the work they had did. He's like, it's out there. You might as well. He's like, I just wish, they had released it better. You know, he's like, there could have been a story to tell there.
I'll actually read Tim Dawson's, his little thread here, this part of it, because this tells you the experience of what happens at the meeting when he showed his after like a week and a half, 2 weeks of trying to throw something together. Like, it's a week and a half, 2 weeks to throw something playable together.
Yeah, no, this part made my blood boil.
Okay, we had 2 weeks and no time to iterate, so we made do. We just really attacked the design, knowing we wouldn't be able to course correct much, but luckily we had a talented team of artists, animators, sound designers. So you basically come together, all right, you work on this, you work, like, just fucking go. Let's just try to do something, proof of concept. All right, so I'll skip that part. A week or so in, the league campaigned for branching the prototype and making a Streets of Rage pitch concurrently because to him they were the same game. It took me sending a 2 a.m. email to the studio head and a let's go for a coffee and a chat the next morning to get that stopped. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You work at Sega and you think they're close to being the same game, Streets of Rage and Golden Axe?
They feel entirely different.
The biggest gut punch came a week and a half in. Combat was working. It was all on track. I was called for a meeting in the big room, so I put the latest build on the network and went to see what was up. All of management was sitting around the big table. I showed the game. Grave faces. There was a pause. Where's the wow factor, someone asked. The lead designer once again complained it wasn't a God of War-like 3D brawler like he wanted. This is a lead designer who doesn't know anything about Golden Axe and wants a 3D brawler. Okay. Someone said maybe it had been better to have made a pre-rendered video where the barbarian fought a monster. This would be my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
I'm working on a game. I probably know more about the history and love this game more than anyone else, and people are telling me shit about a game that has nothing to do with the game that I'm working on. This is a nightmare. I experienced a moment of clarity. Either they couldn't see what was in front of them or wanted me to feel bad because it's the only way they knew how to manage. I was the guy who makes playable prototypes. I had over-delivered, and if they didn't want that, they had screwed up. I've been working 14-hour days. I went home on time that day. I lay in my bed staring at the ceiling. They didn't want it. They wanted something else entirely. I came to my conclusion that they didn't matter. I would continue doing exactly what I intended to try and deliver, what Santana, Mishra, and I had planned in the beginning. So I did. Effects and polish were added. More sounds implemented. Combat timing sped up and input windows widened to make combos executive friendly. The finished build was revealed, and the same management team that had negged me earlier, I guess neglected me earlier, lined up to tell me how good, or negatively, okay.
Neg is the term that pickup artists use. You make someone feel bad to give, so that
lower their self-esteem?
Yes.
Okay. Negged me earlier, lined up to tell me how good it was now. I felt dead inside, not just because of a couple of long 7-day work weeks and starved RSI in my right arm that would go into jeopardized development of Android Cactus, but because I had no trust left in the people who ran things. From the Steam page, Golden Axe may be janky, maybe buggy, maybe an artifact of its time, but it offers a unique glimpse into the prospect of a project that could have been. And he says, go fuck yourself.
That's right.
Yeah, so mismanagement, awful management. It sounds like too many cooks in the kitchen that, oh, let's do this. Not realizing, hey, this guy put something together in 2 weeks. You should be happy
to put something together. Especially something that, looks as nice as it does from the trailer.
And it's something that, from his perspective, was staying true to Golden Axe, but also incorporating shit that they wanted put into this version.
Right.
So it's like, what else do you want me to do?
I've done everything I can for you.
This gives you a glimpse of how fucked up Sega is. Like, just like stuff like this that went on. Like, this tells you why Sega's at the low point. It still is. And trying to get out of the fucking...
Well, that was Sega Australia, which is why Sega Australia is no longer around.
It's just bad shit going on. Oh, God. All right, well, anything else to add? Yeah, changing the title to Golden Axes, that's just weird. Like, why even do that? Like, why?
Yeah, I don't know. It could have been a cool thing. They could have done it the right way. They didn't.
This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Autumn is in the air, Ian, and Manscaped is here to ensure you don't carve your pumpkins when you're grooming. In fact, Manscaped is on a mission to change the way you approach caring for your body and balls. And great news, they just released their products in the UK, Canada, and Australia.
Wowie zowie. Let's talk about the Lawnmower 3.0. It's the best trimmer for your whole body. It offers a replaceable ceramic blade with advanced skin-safe technology, which helps reduce grooming accidents. And their new Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer offers the exact same technology, so you're not going to hurt yourself when you're trimming those delicate nose hairs. Crop kit includes the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant. It includes body wash, shampoo. They don't offer just trimmers. They offer everything for your morning grooming needs. These formulations are all vegan, cruelty-free, dye-free, sulfate-free, and paraben-free, so you know your manhood is in good hands.
All right. Right now, you can get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com with code CUPODCAST. Again, go to manscaped.com and use code CUPODCAST to get 20% off. Take care of your balls this fall. All right, Ian.
Yeah.
A semi-important console just turned 35 years old. October 18th, 1985, the Nintendo Entertainment System was launched in North America.
Wowie zowie.
More importantly, it was launched in northern New Jersey and New York City. More specifically, that's where it launched. Not really North America. It launched in the, not even the greater tri-state area, part of the tri-state area it launched. The team, led by Howard Phillips, were staying in northern Jersey. They would get up every day. They'd go out to malls. They'd go out to, you know, FAO Schwartz. They would set up themselves the stupid game console with a stupid robot and a zapper gun and sell it to people walking by. Hey, look at the... They'd basically have the mall carts in the middle of the malls. You know, hey, try out this game. Here's a controller. This is obviously at a time where video game consoles were dead in North America. They were seen as a joke. They were being clearanced out. You know, $40 Atari games were now being sold for like $5.
No one wanted them.
It was labeled a fad. It was done. Computers were here. Computers is really what you need for your house, not these fucking little toys that are garbage games. And there were they were garbage games for the most part on consoles at that point. Once you got to the video game crash, there was no quality control. Everyone was trying to cash in, putting out any game they could fucking program in 2 weeks. Program games, and just those are games that program in 2 weeks.
Those actually released
and got out there, and they were terrible. So obviously, Nintendo, the little console that could. You know, Nintendo of Japan was like, okay, let's just try this. We have no faith in the market over there. Let's just see if this works. And obviously, it slowly worked. And obviously, it helped turn around the industry in North America. And Nintendo's a little company today that still exists and still making money overall. Obviously, they still would have done well in Japan, but, you know, they're a juggernaut, obviously. So, obviously, we cannot say anything about the NES we haven't said before. It'd be tough not to. But I figure that on the 35th anniversary, it harkens you back to 10 years ago on the 25th anniversary and what has changed in 10 years. On the 25th anniversary of the NES, there wasn't a huge amount of fanfare, believe it or not, at the time. One of the reasons I thought about doing the NES marathon was just because of that. I was seeing, I see nothing really going on about looking back at Nintendo's history and past, and it was kind of weird to me to see that. It was very important, obviously, one of the most important game consoles of all time. 10 years later, we have a lot better appreciation for retro gaming in the history. A lot changed in 10 years. I mean, a lot. Not just how we look and our hairstyles and, you know, we basically went opposite on hairstyles in 10 years. Short for long.
It's true. But
that's what I thought of immediately. So on the 25th anniversary, there was almost nothing out there in terms of articles or coverage from gaming websites. And there was a lot more gaming websites 10 years ago. Holy shit, how many have gone out of business in 10 years?
Oh, yeah, tons. Tons are gone.
To cover. And now you see great things now about, you know, harkening back, you know, Video Game History Foundation, Art of Nintendo Power, talking about, well, here's the invitation to the original launch party, and, you know, things like that. Here's the original magazine article they ran promoting it. And it's like, okay, we're really starting to understand the impact and how this came out to the public 35 years ago. And that's what's fascinating to me. To be able to be on the ground then and see it develop, seeing it in the stores originally, that would have been fascinating for me to have seen that. And seeing the reaction from consumers that just 2-3 years ago, not even had gotten so burned on shitty games. Now try something new to you that looks a little bit different, but we understand you're skeptical, but here, try out Duck Hunt. Put this in your hand, the zapper. Play the Super Mario Brothers game, and just try to reteach people about what video games were after they had just gotten so incredibly burned in the marketplace.
Right.
And that's something that I'd like to see more of a celebration of. Again, it was a ragtag team that did it. I mean, it literally was. And they got out there, they worked hard, and they sold it person to person, and then slowly built it up, and then launched it, what was it, in L.A. in early 86, and then it was slowly trickled out from there.
Nintendo itself is in a different place, too, when you compare it, you know, to the 25 years ago, or 10 years ago, when the 25th anniversary was, and the 35th now. I mean, since that time, 10 years ago, you check in on them, they're coming off the wave of popularity and success that the Wii gave them. But I think Nintendo is starting to feel like a different company to some people, too, with the Wii and its extreme focus on casual players and getting as many people in on it as you could. The failure of the Wii U had not yet happened. The 3DS hadn't even been released yet. So it's crazy to think about what has occurred.
So much in 10 years.
In 10 years. Or yeah. did the 3DS come out and it had just been out? I was trying to find the 3DS.
3DS release date.
Trying to find the 3DS release date. It may have just come out.
It was 2011.
Okay. So yeah, it was right before those two things.
2 years before the Wii U, a year before the 3DS, and then 7 years before the Switch.
And then 35th anniversary of the NES, now we look at now, and Nintendo is, doing just about as well as they've ever done with the Switch. It's not quite the sales levels of the Wii U, but not the Wii U. It's not quite the sales levels of the Wii, but I think that Nintendo as a company is probably on the. I think their image is probably doing a bit better. There were a lot of people who didn't like the Wii. I mean, despite how successful the Wii was, lots and lots of people shit on the Wii. Called it a fad, said that motion controls weren't going to go anywhere. And sure enough, motion controls really didn't go anywhere after that. They became
That was a fad.
Controls are definitely a fad.
I mean, it persisted in their next two consoles, and in the Switch there is motion control, but it's not what they're leaning on. They're not leaning on it.
There are instances where motion control kind of makes sense. Gyroscopic control in a first-person shooter is a huge, hugely awesome thing for people like me who can't fucking aim with their right hand. But yeah, motion control in general is not, it's not the wave of the future. We're not going to start seeing that on every system again.
Yeah, but even if they never sell 100 million Switches, which, hell, I mean, God, we're 3.5 years in, so who the hell knows? Maybe they'll sell 20 more and get close. But the software sales have been, I mean, God, like every game that comes out that's a big hit sells, 10, 20 million units,
right?
It's nuts. So I mean, the attach rate has to be a hell of a lot better than the Wii was.
Absolutely
has to be.
So many people bought the, I mean, we've talked about it, it's been talked about everywhere. So many people bought the Wii and just kind of, it was like the Game Boy. A lot of people bought the Game Boy and kind of left it with Tetris.
Yeah,
a lot of people bought the Wii and left it with Wii Sports. Nintendo is very good at nailing the pack-in games, and I think for a lot of that older person market that people talk about Nintendo getting with the Wii, Wii Sports was kind of all they needed, all they wanted.
See, this is telling me on this website that there was a 9 attach rate to the Wii, but does that include like virtual console games, or is that actual buying games? I would argue it's probably a combination of both. That seems like I don't think that the average would have been 9 bought games on the Wii. That seems high to me versus how many they actually sold.
I don't know. Shovelware was abundant and cheap. I could see that.
Let me see the article while you go on. But all right, going back to the NES, though. Well, obviously the NES you know, we would talk about how you know it helped revolutionize the consoles. You had a proper D-pad on a controller.
Yep.
And two face buttons saying, okay, we're done with this one button bullshit. We're done with dumb experimentation, like with the Vectrex controller. It's weird. That's a janky controller. Or the Intellivision was a disastrous controller. The 5200 was a disastrous controller. The ColecoVision controller isn't the best. This is going to be your controller basically going forward. Something's going to look like an NES controller going forward until the end of time. That's what we decided. That's what works. And that's what we like. And
sure,
that was hugely important to establish that. It also established, though, a greater partnership, or at least firmed it up here, between the third parties and your first party, saying, we're not going to allow this shit just come out on our console anymore. You have to go through us at least a little bit and get our okay. And obviously, there was little lawsuits here and there when it came to certain things, and Nintendo did push too far when it came to some of this.
Yes, there's a happy medium between letting all the crap on it that Atari had on their system and being as hard-nosed about it as Nintendo. But there did need... I mean, they addressed the fact that there did need to be, excuse me, some sort of quality control.
They overcorrected, but they had to.
Right.
And yes, crap did get out on the NES. But at least the crap that came out, you know, wasn't broken shit. You know, like that's the difference, you know, for the most part.
There's nothing really on the NES that I can think of that is a truly broken game in terms of you can't play it.
Yeah, that's licensed.
You can play it. It might not be good, but...
Yeah. We're not talking, you know, Color Dreams games or Action 52. Obviously, those are unlicensed, and Nintendo would never have licensed those anyway because the quality wasn't up to snuff. You know, Wally Bear quality wasn't up to snuff, probably. They probably needed a little more debugging and smooth out some of those rough patches on Wally Bear.
Love that, Wally Bear.
No, he doesn't. That's one of the better unlicensed games that isn't a Tengen game.
Yeah, very obviously. Much. Somehow it is.
Nintendo, you know, I mean, yeah, that console is obviously hugely important. And it's the reason why, you know, we think about it all the time. I would never have imagined in 2010 we would have gotten the NES Classic. I thought, well, I'll
no,
like the shift towards acknowledging retro and celebrating it from Nintendo. The virtual console to me didn't count because they threw that shit on there and it's just like, it's on there, you can buy it. You know, they didn't focus on it. It's like, it's on there, you can buy it. I mean, I was still shocked to see TurboGrafx-16 games offered. That still blew my mind back then. I was like, holy shit, this is so weird for me to see this in Sega games on a Nintendo console. But the actual celebration of their own retro stuff, the shit that had happened, like, we'll say 5 years later and more gearing towards that to me was like, okay, we've arrived. We're not just weirdos talking about 30-year-old consoles. It's acknowledged now, it's more widespread now. This is fun. We're here now. Yeah,
we're here.
We're not just the people yelling inside of a cave.
Arrival.
So, all right, anything else to add on the 35th anniversary? Do you have one? How about one NES memory to share that is like stands out that you haven't really expressed?
One
before?
NES memory that stands out?
Because we've talked about tons of them. We talked about me with Kevin eating, you know, steak and green peas and mashed potato on the bar downstairs while Kung Fu was paused on the big console TV. And that'll be ingrained in my head the first time I played the NES. That'll be ingrained in my head that memory forever.
Nah, man, I don't know. I don't really have anything to say that hasn't been said a billion times before.
Did you ask for that for Christmas, or your brother got it for Christmas? Or when did you
get it? No, it just showed up under the fucking tree. I had no idea what one was. That goes into the whole...
See, that's what happens when you have nice parents. They get you stuff that you know you're going to love that you don't know exists.
Or maybe I was aware of it vaguely. I mean, I knew what video games were. Like, my dad, you know, we had already had the Apple IIe in the house, and I took to that thing very quickly. And I had played the Atari 5200 over at my grandparents' house. But I don't think that I was... I'm sure I knew of it, but I don't remember asking for a Nintendo.
Oh, I took the subtle Ralphie from Christmas Story approach, literally putting the news clipping in front of my dad at the table. Hey, Dad, look at this! It's on sale. It's only $130, but whatever it cost back then.
So yeah, no, I mean, I always tell the story, the dumb story about telling my parents to not get the mushroom because it will kill them. I had no idea what the fuck Mario was before I played Mario the first time. Like I said, I was aware of video games, I had played them, but I did not know what Nintendo was. So no, I think that was a system that my parents saw and they're like, this could be fun for the whole family and bought it. And I mean, we all did. The whole family used that thing for the duration of its lifespan. They played Nintendo for quite a few years.
So it was only a gift for them as well.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, and I mean, at that age, my parents would not have had much money. So it makes sense that, yeah, they bought that, and that was probably... So I don't remember opening much else that year, probably because it was expensive.
Wait a second. My sister played the NES a good amount, but that gift was docked towards my dollar amount, Monica. What the, you got off on that one. You got off scot-free on that one.
Yeah, my brother would have been too young to know what the fuck was going on when we got the Nintendo, and I would have been just happy to see it. So, yeah, it was a whole family gift.
Wait a minute. I want that money back from that Christmas now in 87. Because my sister got her whole range of presents, and she got to play as Mario, and I had to be Luigi. No, I'm going to be Mario. I'm going to go first. Thanks, Thanks, Monica. Thanks for that.
Bizarre.
I got screwed out of that Christmas now, Ian. That should have been a joint present. Because my father had a dollar amount, literal dollar amount he set. And we found out later when I was like 18, 19. He didn't adjust for inflation the dollar amount of our like cap of presents. He didn't adjust for inflation. And once we found out, like, because we kind of once we got to like the early 20s, you still get presents. Like, obviously, I'm asking for less and less in my early 20s. I have money laying around. I can buy stuff. But it's like, I'm looking at the amount. I'm like, this is like, yeah, we're under a certain cap here. Whatever it was, like $160 or $180 cap. That didn't change from 85 to 2000. You gotta adjust up with the price index, consumer price index. You know, if you're acting as Santa. Sorry. Anyway. Sorry. Happy birthday, Nintendo. 35 years old. You can run for president. There you go. That's your final frontier in the U.S. Nintendo can run for president. Probably wouldn't do a bad job compared to what we got. All right, Ian,
we have a Patreon. Oh. And get there, you go to patreon.com/CU podcast. Okay. What do you get at the Patreon, you might ask? Well, for your money and dollars, you get the full video podcast. Full video podcast. You get to, I do a hangout every month. This past week was fun. I got to see Lisa and Tom and Ty and Alan. It was good times. I do writing every week. And you get to vote on a little old poll topic here. What did we have this week? Don't worry, Pat. I'm going to tell them what their choices were this week. Their choices this week were, coming in third place with 21% of the vote. 21. Besides Super Mario 35, what retro games could make a good battle royale game? 23%. 23. What do you miss about gaming conventions? And 56% favorite spooky Halloween themed games.
Woo! Is this for me to answer first?
Go for it.
Okay, well, I've done multiple videos of Pat the Anspa videos of Halloween themed games in the past, of course. I'll start with Splatterhouse when Paku Graffiti.
It's a great game.
On the Famicom. It's fantastic. It's obviously, was it a chibi version of Splatterhouse? Cartoony.
Super deformed.
Super deformed. Is that what chibi means? And it's an adorable, it's a actually very well controlling action platformer, action game. You have your little hatchet. You chop zombies, you know, into pieces. And there's cameos of Michael Jackson doing a Thriller dance with zombies in a Dracula outfit. And it's really, really a fun game, and you understand why that didn't come out in the U.S. because there were so many callbacks to horror movie franchises in that game, so it was never going to come out here. You wish they could have done it here, but it's too violent for a game that would come out in the U.S. Too many licensing issues potentially with other things going on there. That's one. Another one. I like Chiller, as goofy and bad as it plays. I like Chiller for it's an art. It's like an esoteric artifact on the NES. Unlicensed game, not easy to find. Two player zapper action that does not work because me and you have tried that in past NES marathons, and because it doesn't register more than two, you can't register more than one shot at a time. So it's like, okay, you shoot, then
so
I shoot.
Bad.
But the game wouldn't even register a zapper and hitting the button at the same time. It didn't even handle that. They couldn't even handle that for some reason. Couldn't handle two shots at the same time. So that's a good one as well to me. What other Halloween ones did I do that were pretty decent? Jesus Christ, one of the The Haunting on Sega Genesis.
The Haunting starring Poltergei?
Starring Poltergei. Is an amazing game, especially for the time. Amazing concept of going around scaring an awful family, the husband, wife, son, and daughter, scaring them out of the house with inventive, well-animated, sometimes gory scares. I cannot think of another game that's like that.
No, neither can I. It was very unique.
And that's why when you look at, you know, I've said in my review with the floating Frank head, which is one of my crowning achievements. it was so goofy. That was like 2014. I don't know why that sticks in my head. That while I talked about the Genesis games trying to do things differently, and they did. And EA at the time was trying to do things differently. They had all different... basically, EA was an umbrella company still that, like, they were still trying different things and hands off of certain, you know, smaller, you know, I guess dev groups. And you could not picture The Haunting being a console game today. You just... being like a mainstream release, you just wouldn't picture that. It'd be more like a cute little indie game, but not a console game. So The Haunting, to me, really stands out. And that game probably goes for something now. It went for something at the time, 6 years ago.
I think it's like 50 complete. I'd say 40 or 50 complete.
Surprised it's only that amount.
It's one of those games that I'm always surprised isn't going for more, but I don't know.
Let's see. $60 with with the manual not complete. What's a complete? For some reason, some of these games is hard to find complete. It's always like missing the manual or missing the box there. I'm going to say, any other more modern Halloween themed games or ones? Let's see. Any on the Super Nintendo that were scary or spooky? Zombies Ate My Neighbors? I like that game. I'm not like hardcore Zombies Ate My Neighbors. It's okay to me. I'm not like, okay, it's fine.
It's fun.
I don't see the big deal of other people do with that game. I don't have the love for that as much. And what about you, Ian? Well, I try to think more.
So the one that I've been thinking of, these aren't necessarily Halloween themed games, but spooky games, scary games. One that I've been playing, it's still in early access, but I had been waiting for it to come out for a long time. It came out about a year ago. It's World of Horror on the PC. It's by the developers Pantstaz. It is a one bit roguelite horror game. All the graphics are black and white, one-bit graphics. It looks a lot like, in terms of like what it was maybe emulating, the layout and the graphics look a lot like the early Mac Ventures. Shadowgate, Uninvited, Deja Vu, when they were originally made for the Macintosh computer and all the graphics were in black and white. It's a really good game. It's spooky. It's very like eldritch horror, fear of the unknown sort of deal. And basically you control, you know, people who have to stop the old gods from destroying the world. And to do that, you go through like you have to go through, I think it's like 6 semi-randomly generated challenges to get keys to unlock a lighthouse. And it's just it's incredibly effective at being frightening. Also, I get really into the Castlevania games every year Halloween.
Yeah, I should say, yeah, that counts as, because it has all the monsters in it, sure.
Yep. So I've been playing some of those again. I've been playing the first one again. I've been playing Rondo of Blood again. But what I really want to do is download the patched version of Castlevania 2 and play through it. Because I really like Castlevania 2. And
it fixes the little puzzle stuff.
There's definitely problems in Castlevania 2, but I do want to play the patched version that slows down the day-night cycle. And then, yeah, retranslates some of the text so that the clues make sense when you're playing the game.
It slows down the cycle? I mean, it elongates it? It speeds up the transition, right?
From what I understand, it slows down how often it changes.
Ah, but then it also speeds up the transition.
It speeds up the transition, but I could be wrong, but I thought it also halved the amount of times it switches, but I could be wrong. It might just speed up the transition.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I've been thinking I might want to play that this Halloween. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. And then a horror game that I always mentioned that I would love to play this year, but I don't feel like hooking my 360 back up, is Condemned Criminal Origins on the 360. That one took me by surprise. It's a first-person horror game, but it's not like a lot of guns. It's almost all like with your fists and with hand-to-hand weapons, so the monsters are constantly getting up in your face and you have to learn to deflect and attack back. It's a very gets your adrenaline going, and there's some really good set pieces in that game.
You know what, it's not directly Halloween, but it's spooky. The Nightmare on Elm Street NES game, it, to me, is underrated a little bit.
Sure,
a little bit, because it's genuinely like tense when you hear the beat that Freddy's going to be coming. You have to get the radio to wake up.
Yep.
Creepy, kind of weird looking Freddy machinations of designs. There's like four different Freddy creatures that kind of are gruesome. And when you see Freddy for the first time, you do holy crap, because he's powerful. He has the glove. He claws at you, and you know you have to power up to have a chance. And yeah, it's challenging. So, yeah, that
really game, not that bad of a game.
No, I think I gave it a positive review in a certain NES guidebook. I think I reviewed that one. Now I have issues with the Friday 13th NES game still. I still think that one is too cumbersome with the map. That one.
That'll always be the game that I think is a great idea that was executed poorly. That could have been a very good game.
Oh yeah. That would be that a hack of that won't be interesting if they could fix that.
I always think that there's going to be one, and I don't think there is.
Not enough interest in that. What about the Friday 13th game, the indie game that came out, what was it, like 4 years ago at this point? Three years ago. That looked fun. I watched a lot of gameplay videos of that.
It is fun.
Unfortunately, the few times I tried to play it, I couldn't get into a game. There was like server issues still.
Fixed a lot of that. I mean, so it's still out there.
Because I know you hooked me up with that, and we never got a chance to play it. Maybe we should do that at some point.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably do it. Because I know that... is that still supported, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah. They added different costumes and things and different powers. Spring Break clothing pack on Steam for $1.99. Okay, I don't need that. That was interesting because I know there was Dead by Daylight, which is the same genre, but that has a very, very, well, you're going to be killed feel of a game where you really do feel powerless at times. From the gameplay I watched, Jason is a hulking beast that, you know, you can't really take on, so you're constantly running away. And it is kind of fearful when you're playing that. So I think they got the mood right for that game.
Indeed.
Yeah. You still
haven't played it recently. I've been wanting to go back to that, or I want to try Dead by Daylight. That's the other like big.
Didn't they get Mike Myers for Dead by Daylight? They got the skin for Mike Myers.
They did. Yep.
So there you have it. Yeah, we covered that a lot when it came out. We were excited about that. That seems like it was longer than 3 years ago for some reason. That seems like that was way in the past. It seems like it was 7 years ago already. 2017 seems so far. Long ago for
it
some
really
reason
it really does way too long ago.
Pre Castle Country 2018. All right, well, then I think we covered a good amount of stuff.
We did without
retreading.
We did
on that one. So yeah, patreon.com/CU podcast, or you can join us on YouTube, but you can't vote on YouTube, but you get everything early. All right, Q&A time.
Oh, there's a Q&A
on the CU podcast. Yes, yeah, there's a Q&A. This is from at Lord X Iscariot. The recent rise of GameCube prices on eBay and elsewhere. Discuss Ian's opinions on this relating to Luna and other systems he's seen on the rise during the pandemic.
Well, I didn't realize, but this kind of ties into what we talked about last week. The pandemic is, in terms of like prices of systems being popular, the pandemic has... It's definitely increased GameCube prices. I feel like every game that's on the GameCube has a potential to be a $100 game at this point. It's just weird to see stuff come in and see where the prices are going. In reality, I think a lot of the stuff on the GameCube right now is probably the popular stuff is, you know, going between $50 and $100. But with the pandemic, everything has gone up, and what I saw early on was that people wanted to play video games, and I almost feel like, just like with everything else that was going on, people's panic was influencing their decision. So, you know, you had people going to grocery stores and, you know, trying to panic buy 8,000 rolls of toilet paper, and you had
people panic buying meat.
And panic buying meat. Well, I had people come into the store and panic buy systems. You have a PS3? No. Well, how about a PS2? No. Well, how about this? No. Well, what do you have? I have a Sega Genesis. Well, I'm buying that Sega Genesis. And people would just buy fucking whatever.
They're thinking the internet was going to go down. They can't play games in the modern console. They got to buy whatever.
I have no idea.
Give me a Fairchild stat. I'll play anything.
But, you know, people were definitely panicking about what they were going to do, how they were going to occupy their time.
Jesus.
And, yeah, it just didn't seem to matter what it was. We are starting to see a little bit of people starting to sell some of that stuff back off. And prices are starting to go down to normal levels, like at least through Luna. If you were to buy a Switch, if we had one, it would be, you know, probably normal used price, you know, at this point. You know,
well, they are in stock,
$279 or $269 or something like that. It wouldn't last long, and you know, we're not really seeing them, but prices are finally getting to the point where, yeah, on some of the newer stuff, because it's getting restocked, like the PS4s, the Xbox Ones, the Switches, those prices are starting to come back down to earth. And I think, you know, in enough time, we'll start to see the prices on the retro systems come back down to earth. I do think the games will probably stay peaked a little bit, though, because people aren't going to necessarily want to get rid of games so quickly for less than what they paid for them. So I think it's going to be a matter of the market will make those prices fall eventually, but I think it's going to be stubborn about it. I think people are going to try to hold on to and continue to get $70 for their copy of, you know, Super Mario Sunshine or something like that.
You think so?
Yes.
Well, that only lasts forever, and eventually people are going to start selling them. So,
well, yeah, it'll happen eventually. I just don't think it's going to be as fast as... I think it's going to take longer than most people want.
Sure. Plus, like we said before, the GameCube probably has more console collectors than some of these other consoles they bought during the pandemic.
I hate to sound negative. It'll also be interesting to see what happens if and when there is a second wave this fall.
We're in it. We never had the first.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, we haven't left.
We were supposed to have a first wave and then stop. Have a second. No, it's
instead of saying a wave, I should say a surge.
Oh, a surge.
Yeah, if there's another surge, and if I don't think we'll get back to the point where we are told to lock down, even if we should. But that could basically the virus is, as awful as it is to say it, the longer it's around, the higher the prices are going to stay on these games.
Okay,
so that's where I stand.
So it's gonna be around for another year or so, or
yeah, I have no idea. You know,
that is interesting. You said people were panic buying a game console. They were that out of sorts. Where buy me something? I don't know how I'm going to spend time with myself. But get me
I had a number Genesis. Of people who had come in and went down through like two or three systems before finally landing on something. And this was earlier on. But yeah, people were kind of just taking whatever.
Man. There's other entertainment outlets.
Do you have a PS2? No. Do you have an Xbox? No. Fine, then I'll take this GameCube. Do you have a GameCube? No. Do you have a PlayStation 1? No. Fine, I'll take this Super Nintendo. It was just... It was very weird.
I want it right now. I'm not going to eBay. I want it right now.
Well, and yeah. I think that's a lot of it, too, is maybe they were bored as shit and they wanted something to do that night. And, you know, they could have gotten whatever they actually wanted if they had gone online. But, you know, no one wants to wait because, fuck, we can't go anywhere and we're bored now. So, yeah.
I wonder if board games have made a comeback during the pandemic. Now I think about it. Has there been a lot more people playing board games at home, like in families?
I don't know if there's more people playing board games, but D&D has... people playing D&D almost certainly shot up during the pandemic. D&D is not that hard to run online. You know, other board games and stuff could be. I mean, I'm sure that digital versions of board games grew popular during this time. But, you know, if you're on your own and you're not supposed to be going out and seeing people, well, who are you going to play board games with yourself?
Free Battleship. I don't know. Let's start playing Battleship against each other.
Oh, God. Battleship sucks. I hate that game.
Oh, you can just play one in your browser.
Yeah.
Basically.
So.
Well, we're going to start getting our chess games going online, Ian.
Just think about that.
What's the best way to play that? Probably we'll play the MSN Messenger. Remember the Microsoft Messenger? They had the games built in. Remember that?
I never used Messenger. You were one of those few people who actually used MSN Messenger.
Well, I was on the Microsoft network. Yahoo had the games built in as well, though, I believe, back in the day. And Yahoo Messenger. AOL, they all had them, actually. AOL got them near the end, too, I believe. AOL AIM had them.
Did they?
Yeah, pretty sure. Rest in peace, AIM. All right, anything else to add here? Let's see, can I comment on this at all?
No.
No, I'm not allowed to.
No, I'm
comment.
Just saying I have nothing else to add.
Well, it's really on GameCube prices and eBay and elsewhere discussing Ian's opinions. Okay, yeah, I don't have much to add there. I would say that since we're not really panicking anymore, we've learned to live with this. for the most part, even though I still see people congregating at house parties, and that's where now like a lot of these spreads are happening. It's like, oh, I have a house party with 10, 12 people or more, and that's where this is happening. I think that I have nothing else to say about this. I'm running out of steam.
We're done. Time to go get some lunch.
All right, that's it for this CU podcast. Again, you can leave us a comment, an audio message at anchor.fm/thecupodcast. Maybe we'll play you next week. We'll play you. If you're in Australia or New Zealand or anywhere else.
All right.
I'm going to go eat. I'm going to go edit a podcast. Ian, what are you going to do the rest of the day?
I'm going to go home and organize. Keep working on my record collection.
How long has it been organizing record collection for?
I do a little bit every week.
What letter are you up to? Or is this a high fidelity thing where you're organizing by the order you bought them?
No, F or G.
Something
I think
insane.
I'm on G.
You're on G?
Yeah.
All right. All right. We'll see you later, I guess. Bye.
Bye.